Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Film Philosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting and special episode of The Film Philosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs in a galaxy far, far away. We have a great show in store for you today, and I am Eddie Villanueva, by the way, and I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Spencer Windu Williams.
Yes, the purple lightsaber is mine.
One of the few black people in Star Wars, and he's gone.
We got the coolest lightsaber, I'm fine with it.
Also with us, returning for her job that she's been out of commission for a little bit.
It was the end of the semester. I was allowed to not be here.
I don't know.
Nobody signed my form. My professor said I couldn't be here.
Intern Amy / IJNU Robot, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah.
Yes, this is not Life Day, but we will celebrate indeed.
Gosh, why did you remind me? Oh my gosh, I just remembered that they mentioned that, and it's a canon thing now.
Yes, it is. Scratchy and stinky.
As you can tell, we have a great show in store as we are going to be celebrating Star Wars Day, May the 4th, here on the podcast. So stick around as we dive in and we just kind of touch on a few of the episodes from the saga and just give our thoughts. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits, please.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning, but never on Life Day, on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
You know, it's like the T-Rex. If you don't mention it, it doesn't exist. But
that's
now that you've mentioned
it, works
yeah,
at all.
It's exactly how it works. It's I do not. It in traffic all the time. Like, I just
of courage.
Don't move. What?
Just like in traffic, it's a caravan of courage.
You know what?
This is not.
No.
Nobody signs my permission slip. This is what happens when I don't get enough credits.
Oh my gosh.
Although, I do have to mention, side note, intern Amy has finally finished the Rocky saga. So she has seen 1, 2, 3, 4. I advised her to skip 5, and she saw Rocky Balboa.
It was good. We'll have that talk later. Mm-hmm. That might be a Sylvester September or something. I don't know.
Cool.
Something shiny. But today is not about that.
No, today is about something entirely different, and that is celebrating Star Wars Day by reviewing the Skywalker saga. Now, if you have not been in any movie theater within the last 30, 40 years, you may not know of the social and cinematic pariah of the Star Wars films. They have been a staple in the nerd fandom for the last 50 years. They have created film after film by the genius therein, George Lucas, and has created pretty much a community of people who share that same love and passion for these films. Obviously, this fandom goes beyond the people here at this table. I'm pretty sure even with all of our ages combined, that still probably wouldn't amount to the oldest Star Wars fan out there, because there are people who have been following this for ages. And so we are taking the time for what is now known for May 4th as May the 4th Be With You or Star Wars Day to talk about the films that have shaped us, who we are today. Guys like, you know, myself, Spencer, intern Amy, we've been able to come about and just latch on to something that has been already established prior to even us even existing. And the great thing is that we have a lot of stories here just to share about our experiences with the saga alone. Because I know at one point in time, Spencer, you've mentioned that you actually went to the theaters to go see one of these for...
Yep. I've got a story later.
He's got stories. And that's the great thing about this saga, this franchise, is it creates those stories and it creates incredible moments and so forth. And so I know myself, I've been a fan since I was super young. I know intern Amy has a very special place in her heart for these movies. And I'm talking like this more so not because of like for cinematic opportunity, but for the fact that I know once we get to this point, if you're listening to the song, intern Amy is about to let the water work.
Shush, shush, this song makes me cry. And now he's just doing it because no one signed my form.
But this is a franchise that has stood the test of time over the course, like I said, of 50 years with over five, six tons of directors, actually, to be honest, if we're looking beyond just the films, with George Lucas, Irvin Kershner, Richard Marquand, J.J. Abrams, Rian Johnson, you know, with the animated shows with Jon Favreau and David Filoni, and all these people who have helped make this franchise what it is. Today, we're going to take the opportunity to kind of go through just the films for today, and maybe for another time, maybe next year when we celebrate Star Wars Day, we'll go over like maybe some of the animated films. But today, we are reviewing the magnanimous opus, if you will, of George Lucas, and that is the full Skywalker saga from the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, and the sequel trilogy. So strap in, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. But as we kind of dive into this thing, and I'm looking over at intern
Amy. Staring at a container of beef broth, trying not to cry.
You hear the... but yeah, this, like I said, these movies, do you need to wipe your eyes?
No. No one will see me cry.
I'm holding Grogu's hand.
His too little of three fingers.
We have a tiny Grogu on the desk.
We have a couple things. We have a baby Bantha. We got a lightsaber, if you will. Let me see if I can just... There it is. See, that's... Yes, I am proud of this.
Yes, showing something off on a tile.
Audio.
That's one of the great things, though. If you just heard that, you knew exactly what that was.
You don't want to find it in the dark, though. You broke it. Skywalker saga. My eyes are dry.
For tally, now.
Tally woe.
So if we're looking at the full list of people that are in this film...
There are too many.
There's a lot. I mean, you're looking at, in the original trilogy, you're looking at Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher... You're looking at Harrison Ford. You're looking at, what's his name? The one who plays C-3PO.
Christopher something.
No.
Daniel
something.
I'm like, is he the two, is he a two first name? It's either, I just, there.
The two first name guy? Is that what you said?
Well, it's Daniel something, but I thought it was Peter Mayhew. I'm going with Peter Mayhew, just to throw that out while we distract from the fact that I can't remember C-3PO's.
Anthony Daniels.
Yeah, two first names.
I mean,
I was right.
Anthony Daniels, Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah.
You know, you had people like Frank Oz, who did the wonderful voice of Yoda. You know, you had incredible people. Warwick Davis, who played not only R2-D2, but he also played one of the Ewoks. And then obviously...
He was Wicket.
Yeah, Ewok. He's an Ewok.
I know, he was officially named... Sorry, keep
His
going.
Name is Wicket... Something Davis.
Yes. Warwick.
Or Warwick, isn't that?
Warwick.
Which is Warwick Davis' first name. James Earl Jones, the illustrious, wonderful James Earl Jones, Alec Guinness. I mean, there's a whole plethora of people who are in all of these films. These are just the mainstays here. I mean, because then you have, you know, why are you looking at me like that, Spence?
No, I'm just...
You're like, you're really going to go through them all, aren't you?
No, that's the original. And then when we get to prequels, we get...
Ewan McGregor, you get Liam Neeson, you get Ray Parker for episode one.
Samuel Expletive.
Samuel Jackson, Ian McDiarmid, you get Frank Oz again, who does the voice of Yoda, obviously. I mean...
The short one that's not Haley Joel Osment?
Natalie Portman?
No.
But she's in it.
She is. The one that's Anakin, I don't
remember. Oh, the little kid. We don't.
That's not Haley Joel Osment.
We don't speak of him.
we got lost. It's okay.
But I mean, Christian Haydenson, you know.
Well, you'll mention the guy with the sand speech, but
yeah,
not the kid.
Because he's in two. The kid's only in one.
Bantha Poodoo right there.
And then with the sequel trilogy, we got the likes of Oscar Isaac, Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, you got Adam Driver, you know, you have a couple appearances of Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, Kelly Marie Tran, Billy Dee Williams does reprise his role. The incredible fact about this entire saga is that Anthony Daniels has been the sole person to play C-3PO in every film. So that's
and in
pretty.
Disneyland.
Really?
He recorded for the Star Tours. He recorded the audio for C-3PO.
Oh, and then, of course, Lupita Nyong'o as Maz Kanata. We cannot forget that.
I love her.
And then, obviously, there are other films. We can we may touch on those, the in-betweeners, such as Rogue One and Solo.
I don't know what you're talking about. Rogue One was fantastic.
We may talk about that one.
There's only one person that I want to lift out of Solo, and he's very, very small and is played by Moaning Myrtle. Babu Freak.
Wasn't he in nine?
No,
he was in nine.
Solo.
No, it wasn't.
I thought it was in nine.
Babu Freak is in the Rise of Skywalker.
Whoa, I really thought it was in Solo.
Thank the Lord. Your homework for this episode.
I was watching Rocky.
Yo, Adrian.
There you go.
There you go.
Yo, Princess Leia. Hey. Oh my
gosh. So. Obviously, like we said, there's a lot of people who star in this film. And this film, like I said, has made fans of all of us throughout the course of time for more than half a century, to be quite honest. And it just seemed high time for this podcast to take the opportunity and kind of just give our thoughts on each trilogy as a whole. Like, if we were taking one whole movie review of each trilogy as a part and what it makes up as a whole, that's what we're doing today. So... without further ado, I almost forgot. I almost said further review.
I felt like it.
No, we were like, this is going to be real quick.
Let's go ahead and jump into the original trilogy. And obviously, the original trilogy is the, I guess if you want to call it, the poster child for everything to come after the fact. I mean, you have George Lucas, who directed that first one, Episode 4, which at the time, it wasn't called Episode 4. It was just called Star Wars. And then Irvin Kershner came in and did Empire Strikes Back, and Richard Marquand came in and did Return of the Jedi. Oddly enough, Richard Marquand came in when he did 6. He came in and still was under the direction of George Lucas, but Irvin Kershner was a wild man. He ultimately went completely off book from what George did, kind of like what we got with the current recent sequel trilogy, where we had J.J. Abrams did 7 and 9, but 8 was done by Rian Johnson, which we will talk about because there's a little bit of a dispute here at the table as well with that. But let's talk about the original trilogy. So we've all obviously here seen the original trilogy.
Yes.
I'm just going to make sure why we point out the Bantha in the room here, okay? Just
he makes Bantha noises if you squeeze him.
Hold on. Let's see. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's me after Nacho Friday. So let's talk about high and low points, shall we? When it comes to the original trilogy, for me, like, one of the highest points that I think is by far so pivotal and instrumental in making the original trilogy so iconic and unique is the Empire Strikes Back reveal of Darth Vader being Luke Skywalker's father. Now, here's the thing, and I think, unfortunately, it's the bare truth for all of us here. As we had grown up, there had been so many people who made fun of that instance in the movie, in other forms, whether it was on TV or other movies. How many of you, like, out of this table knew that was going to happen before you actually saw the film?
I knew the whole film was going to happen before I saw any of the original.
Oh, my God.
I had the misfortune of people spoiling it for me because when I was a wee lass and we sat down to watch it, I had a cousin that leaned over and goes, "Oh, yeah, that's his dad." And I'm like, "What?"
What? That's so mean. You're already watching.
Mean family. Very mean family.
My God. Would you guys though agree that that's a pretty pivotal point in the entire movie? Like, it's a pretty big high point. Would you say, Amy?
Yeah, I mean, I could also say that finding out that Leia is his sister and that he tried to mac up on that.
What, like, do you mean tried to? He did.
My brain still purges that moment.
It happened. You can thank Mr. Irvin Kershner.
I mean, that is so of the original trilogy. Empire Strikes Back is still my favorite. Yeah. The way that it's shot, the way that it feels just like we'll see with the sequels. It turned out to be my favorite of the originals. And yeah, the reveal of Darth Vader being Papa Skywalker really not only rattled some cages, but it's been celebrated as cinematic history ever since.
Yeah. I would say that's true because of the fact that when you have something, and I'm pretty sure at the time when the film debuted, if you were one of those jerkwads who like to talk about the movie as you're leaving the theater, on the way out, passing by the line of people who are about to go into the theater to see this film, if you're one of those people who like to spoil things like that...
And it was old school spoilage. It wasn't even like full internet spoilage.
No, it was like...
It was like, oh my gosh, Spencer, did you see that moment?
Why did you catch this telegram that I have for you?
Yeah. Right?
It's like an RKO radio show over here.
I mean...
Brought to you by Ovaltine.
Hey, we're Bisquick.
Bisquick or Nesquick?
No, I want Bisquick.
Bisquick is for biscuits.
Yeah,
and pancakes. Why would I want to be by Nesquick?
Because we're talking about Ovaltine.
But Ovaltine stands alone in and of itself. And do you know what they didn't drink in Star Wars? Ovaltine.
They didn't drink... Nobody drinks Blue Bisquick.
No, but you make pancakes.
I think I have to agree with Spencer on that one. I mean, nobody drinks Bisquick.
Johnny Knoxville probably proved us wrong on that one at some point.
I can imagine.
And he's in the Star Wars film too.
Little Amy getting up in the morning and her mother going, "Hello, dear. Would you like a warm cup of Bisquick?"
They can... This is why no one gets Blue Milk anymore.
And that's another interesting facet, like, of the original trilogy, establishing things like Blue Milk, establishing like bar bands as like aliens with like flutes and little things like that.
That was a bassoon.
You know what? In space, no one can hear you blow. So what I'm saying,
apparently, they could hear them. Hello.
We weren't there, so it's like the dinosaurs. We don't know what color the dinosaurs were. We just make it up.
Colors.
So, but all these things that were kind of established in this original trilogy that kind of made its way to pop culture, people actually trying to make Blue Milk back in the day, people actually, yeah.
What?
Yes, before there was a recipe, there were people trying to make Blue Milk. And depending upon your variation and what you have capable, blueberries and milk work really well. Food dye in milk is really nasty. I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay, I did not realize this was a thing. Okay.
It is a thing. Even now, have you seen that you can buy Blue Milk at Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland?
You can also buy it from your local Whole Foods.
You can buy, you can. It's freshly squeezed, by the way.
Oh, from what?
Oh, that's exactly. That's a sequel moment.
So okay,
we didn't learn until the sequels. Remember? There you go.
That's my low point for the
Yep. Low point for sequel.
Well, there's a couple of
them.
Okay, so what about you, Spence? I gave mine. What is your high point or even low point? You know, if you don't want to talk about a high, what's maybe a low point that you have?
No, those are both my high and my low. The one where the Darth Vader reveal and the one where he was kissing his sister because, like, that bothered me for years. It still bothers me.
It still bothers me. I loved...
Don't forget, she did that twice, by the way. She did that in episode 4 when they're about to cross that bridge, or they're going to cross on that swinging rope or that little. And then when, like, out of spite, turns away from Harrison Ford, Han Solo, and kisses Luke, and he's like, "Yep, I kissed my sister."
Wait, did he know that at that point?
No.
Okay, that's better.
Because he doesn't find out until Return. No, he finds out in Empire. You, as the audience member, find out. Because Obi-Wan and Yoda have a conversation as Luke is leaving, and he goes, you know, he's our only hope. And Yoda's like, "No, there is another." And, well, technically, you don't find out she's the sister until Return, because that's when...
But when you find out, you can't unsee it.
Oh, by the way, you know what's super cool? And I just found this out, and it was confirmed, and I'm super excited about it, so don't get upset. In Return of the Jedi... The robe that Yoda is covering himself up in as he's passing, mm-hmm, was confirmed that it's Qui-Gon Jinn's robe.
Huh. Aww.
So little information that we're going to be talking about once we get into the prequel trilogy. But yeah, apparently it was confirmed that blanket or whatever is made from the material of
Qui-Gon Jinn's stuff.
Yeah.
He just raided the temple and be like, this for me. You dead. I get your trunk.
Yeah, that's a real odd thing. Like, because
it
like,
was his favorite.
It would have been then when it's like, I'm fleeing for my life, but I'm stealing Qui-Gon's blanket because that thing is soft.
And it smells so good. Yes. I'm going to a swamp. I must scuttle something that smells like Liam Neeson.
That's like, the thing about Star Wars. It's like sometimes things tie together and like they have weird backstories like that.
Yeah, yeah. True. I mean, that's the way it works. I mean, what can you do? Was there any other moment that stood out to you?
No, like really, because like I feel like I only remember like the most traumatizing things from the first like, thing. Like Luke like cutting open the things hiding the on Hoth.
Or Luke coming back home after he realizes that the precision of stormtroopers could only have done this. And
that phrase was never uttered again.
Ever.
And then he comes back home and there's like these charred bodies
on his front
step. You want to
know what's
really
bad? I, for years... whenever they would go back to that, I couldn't figure out what was on the ground. And I didn't know that it was his aunt and uncle. And so I was all, I'm not lying. It literally,
Luke,
until
can
I
get
got
the beef
to.
Beef jerky order from the front door.
I just, like, literally, I didn't even realize there were smoking bodies. I was just like, huh.
They were
that's a weird
bodies.
Bush.
That's a weird bush?
Oh, I'm an innocent.
I don't think so.
Do you know
that's
what?
A weird
do you know
bush.
Who is not an innocent? Han shooting first.
Controversy. Yeah. Here's the problem. Okay, so let's talk about that. The Han shooting first situation has been like manipulated and changed over the years with the redone cuts and the redone cuts.
The digital masterings and the Blu-rays.
Because there was one where George Lucas actually like made Han move his head to the side and then he shot, and then there was one where he shot first by like a millisecond against Greedo and all this craziness. And to be quite honest, I really don't care.
I just like that he's established as he is a sketch fella, but he's going to get the job done. Also, Chewie. Oh, Chewie. Because he's never, you know, he rips off people's arms when he loses.
That
games.
We've never seen, which I'm kind of sad about. I wish
we...
I could...
No, we don't. I was trying to think of if there was an opportunity where we see him rip off somebody's arms in any space of the saga, and I'm like, I don't remember.
Like,
there's no
got,
way that's
you got
happen,
feral though. Chewie and like Solo, but that doesn't really
that's the closest
count.
You're going to get.
That's the, apparently he eats people, but he got
Disney
you know.
Will not let his image be tainted.
Well, he already did.
Well,
hey,
like
he was in the Solo movie. That's
yeah,
what I'm
but
saying.
Like not in a way that children can remember.
Very true. Very true.
I will tell your children.
You will forget that this movie
is going to be the lizard monkey of the entire episode. Do you remember the lizard monkey?
In which one?
So he always is his name Salacious Crumb?
Are we talking about the bounty hunter?
No. He's the weird little like puppet that has the beak.
Oh,
he's
yeah,
called,
you're talking about in Return of the Jedi.
He's called the lizard monkey.
I know you're talking about is that his name though? Salacious what?
Crumb.
Yep, that's what his name is. There it is.
Look at that. He's really creepy and he can't.
He's like the inbred cousin of a Mogwai.
Wow. Or an aging Mogwai. Like a really poorly aging Mogwai.
I would hate to see Gizmo look like this.
Gizmo won't look like that. He's got love.
So, okay, so what about you, Amy? Which scene stands out the most for you, or what was like the lowest point for you in this trilogy?
So in original trilogy standout moments, a high and a low point, the music, the build, the set design of the ceremony at the first one when everybody gets medal except for Chewie. That was really dumb. It's rectified later, but it was really dumb. I loved how that looked. That was weird. Hold on. Just kidding. Lando Calrissian and the reveal of Cloud City, the design, especially at the dining room table. Those I remember very distinctly. I happen to have gone out and bought glasses that mimic what they had at Cloud City. I'll show you later. I'm that weirdo. And then the speeder bike chase in Return of the Jedi, because it made it really cool to be outside in the woods. Like, everybody I knew, like, after seeing that, my brother and I would pretend, and my brother, he's not as cool as you guys, but we would pretend to ride our speeder bikes around the neighborhood, and we lured a whole bunch of children, because they're all the same age as us, to ride their...
Why are we using this?
Because I had snacks, and they didn't. And how else am I going to get people to be, like, you know,
speeder targets. running around really fast with a BB gun. Bang, bang, you're down. Oh, my eye.
No, I'm not. You missed me. So those are some of those moments I really remember vividly. Low points or things that I still laugh at no matter how old I get. The check to see if he's there. Tap with the foot. After Darth Vader strikes down Obi-Wan, he's like touching with his foot, like
maybe there's a hole in the floor.
There's a hole in the floor. Squish, squish. You there, buddy? And then I love Frank Oz, the Yoda. Yoda in the swamp was so scary to watch at some points because he was just like, I didn't want to be around Yoda in the dark.
Literally going through everybody's luggage and everything like that.
You just confirmed he stole Qui-Gon Jinn's clothes. Yeah.
I just said his cloak. I didn't say anything about his clothes. Man didn't take his woolly mammoth underwear or anything. I don't know.
TBD.
You know, hey. But you do bring up a really interesting point. One of my low points for the film, for this trilogy, is how many times it got digitally remastered. Because, I kid you not, I cannot stand in the most recent remaster hearing Darth Vader say no.
No,
as he throws the Emperor Palpatine down that
down chute. The steps.
Okay, I thought we were talking about episode 3 for a second.
No.
Not
he
yet.
Does this in the they remastered
they
it.
They made it so it's
to
consistent.
Where he says that at the end of the movie.
That wasn't in there originally,
no,
right?
Okay.
No, it's not. No, by God, no.
James Earl Jones
was like, uh-uh.
I'm pretty sure they got someone else like, James, will you do it? Hell no. it doesn't make sense to add all that. And it's like, it really does water down a lot of what the original trilogy did. I mean, you got all those scenes in Mos Eisley with like these weird looking creatures that are huge and digitally added. I mean, some of the scenes are okay, like some of the desert scenes on Tatooine. But a lot of the additional things, like some of the things they did for Cloud City was okay. It was cool.
But it wasn't absolutely necessary. I think So I own and I've made no... I have to hide it whenever Eddie comes over to visit because I have a gated VHS series box of the original trilogy. And he's always like, oh, I'm gonna steal it. I'm like, no, please don't. This is my baby. I also have a VCR, so there's a purpose.
Okay, but you should probably transfer that off of VHS.
I
know. If I can help you do that.
I'm like, but it's beautiful.
But the tape's gonna wear out eventually.
If I'm watching it too much. Well, yeah, the tape, no, you're actually.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
no,
we'll talk about that. Yeah, no. But that doesn't have any of... I love that the first time if you show somebody who's been watching like Avengers and everything else and you show them the original trilogy where everything hasn't been changed or touched up, where the speeders still bounce, where you can see the shadows or you notice that the miniatures, like you might see some fish wire on one of the shots for the miniatures. It's all of that beautiful wonder of old school filmmaking that was ahead of its time for when it was when it was released, but that it inspired generations and continues to inspire generations of creators and content creators to make that universe not only real but tangible. And it's such a discredit when everything's like, you liked Wizard of Oz in Technicolor, right? We're gonna make it in like ultra super Technicolor. Like, there's some days.
In 3D.
Would you like a flying monkey at your face? Like,
do you think, though, that with everything, even with the remasters, by the way, you actually reminded me of another really bad one. And the
I'm all the bad things.
You reminded me of some of the bad things. And one of the worst things of all that happened was the change at the end of Return of the Jedi, when you have the original Anakin Skywalker be replaced with Hayden Christensen.
That's right. Yep.
So that happened. This was the actor who played the reveal of Darth Vader at the end of Return of the Jedi. This is what the remastered did.
Yeah, I haven't seen this remastered.
Oh, thank, you're lucky.
Thank all that is holy.
Thank your lucky stars, buddy.
We're like mentioning things and I'm like, ah.
This is the thing that comes up that every couple of years they're like, oh, it's
George is going to touch it again. Don't let George touch it again.
Speaking of George, touch it again.
Well, here's the thing before we get that way. Knowing everything that George has done and everything that it's, you know, things that have been going on with the Star Wars franchise, do you guys still feel like there's a strong enough fan base for the original trilogy? And I'm just talking about 4, 5, and 6.
I will go first because I see Spencer's making the face of many thinkings.
Yeah.
For me, knowing the plethora, cornucopia, and vast expanse that is the Star Wars community, the original trilogy, even with all of its faults and foibles, is like Stan Lee for Star Wars.
Yeah. And mind you, this is just based on just the original mm-hmm. trilogy, because I know as we go on, we're going to see a lot of tests to the Star Wars fandom. But overall, do you feel like the original trilogy has a well cohesive story that you get the gist of it after you've seen 4, 5, and 6? What do you think, Spence?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Like, the thing about 4, 5, and 6 is that it's so ingrained in kind of like nerd and geek culture mm-hmm. that like, without even seeing the movie sometimes, you kind of just become aware of, like, the story beats and stuff. Yeah. And so, like they tell, like, a great story on their own, and I think they're still really important to Star Wars.
Yeah. And I agree, like Spencer was saying, if you find anybody who says, like, Luke, I am your father, like, people are going to be like, oh, I know that thing. That's from the movie Star Wars.
Or if you have someone go, I love you, and somebody else goes, I know.
Like, seriously.
Between that or somebody gets called a scruffy nerf herder. Like,
scruffy headed nerf herder.
See?
Get it right.
See?
No, but it's true. Like, those types of sayings, those things that have been in pop culture, people just know them and immediately can finish that sentence for most people. And they may not even have seen maybe all of the Star Wars films. And what was that you said?
Bring me the Death Star plans. My favorite is Duntui. They're on Duntui, but I'm just a weirdo like that.
or if you're around Catholics enough and people say, may the force be with you and also with you.
Yeah.
So transitioning over from the original trilogy, we're going to take a step back in time and actually check out and talk about the prequel trilogy. Now, the prequel trilogy is a very interesting excerpt in the storyline of Star Wars because of the fact that George Lucas did direct all three.
It's a vat of shenanigans.
It's a vat of something. Interestingly enough, Spencer, you actually went to go see The Phantom Menace in theaters.
This is where I started with Star Wars. Oh, you too.
Yeah, well, I didn't start with Star Wars here, but yes, you tell your story and then I'll tell mine.
Yeah, so my dad was like, okay, we're going to go see Star Wars. And I'm like, oh, they're doing a new one? Okay, and then it started episode one. I was like, how is this the first one if there's been more in the past? Very confused. As a child, I was very logical. Like, I didn't get it. I was like, okay, we're here for this. And then I proceeded to watch 2 hours of politics, and it was boring. As a child, I was like,
trade regulations and senators arguing, and
riveting stuff. For
this
a kid.
Is pod racing.
Pod racing, I liked. Like, I liked that. And when that N64 game came out, I was at my uncle's playing that, and it was awesome.
Are you kidding? That arcade that arcade cabinet, like the whole thing with the back of the pod racer and everything,
yep.
That was at the movie theaters for us. So when we would go, me and my brother would go and take turns at the movie theater arcade room and play that game. And it was like, it had the two-sided, like, you know,
that thing's awesome.
And it was cool. It was really cool.
It's the best thing to come out.
I was going to say, it's unfortunate that the rest of that first movie was kind of... So here's the thing.
There's the thing.
I think, to be quite honest, the highlight, one of the biggest highlights I have for the prequel trilogy actually comes out of the first film. And that's the introduction, well, not just the introduction, but the fight sequence between Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon, and Darth Maul, as well as the song or the score from the wonderful John Williams, Duel of the Fates. And the thing is that even people who don't know music, who may not even know compositions or scores or even Star Wars, you play that song and they're like, oh, that's Duel of the Fates. And you're like, what movie is that from? And they're like, I don't know. Just know it's Duel of the Fates. Like, but that sequence alone is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And you have somebody as talented as Ray Parker, mm-hmm. who plays Darth Maul, do a lot of those scenes on his own. Like those were pretty much him in every scene, doing all of his own stunts. It was incredible to watch that in a Star Wars film where, as Spencer had mentioned, yeah, before the steppy with Darth Vader, you know, checking to see
that
if the Wicked Witch of the West kind of, you know, she liquidated. These guys are literally like swinging, you know, their lightsabers and really having a strong fight.
Yeah,
and
that was the part of the movie where I was like, oh, I like this.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. I think there's a lot. Okay, there's a lot of low points in the prequel trilogy.
Sand.
I'm gonna let you have that one because I'm gonna say one of the other low points of the film was the introduction. I wasn't gonna say his name. Gosh, the introduction of midichlorians. Take it easy, you two.
Oh, you took my other one.
Gosh.
And Jar Jar Binks.
That's Bantha Poodoo.
The fact that
George Lucas
restructured the entire anatomy, if you will, of how the Force works by saying it's a biological thing, really does take away from the mysticism, if you will, of what the Force really is. Because now not only is it something that can be inherited, but it could also be something that could be transitioned by a blood transfusion or something. Like if your midichlorian count is low, I could be like, here, Spence, take some of mine. And then all of a sudden your midichlorian count goes up. Like, I don't get how that works.
Yeah, but you can't replenish that. So it just goes back down again.
How do you know?
Unless
if you already have
like,
some in you.
Well, no. I generally.
Like, how do you quantify a biological, you know, specimen or whatever that's in these people that they're able to analyze and quantify when Qui-Gon's like, here, let me. Oh, what's that? Oh, we're just going to test your blood, blah, blah, blah. And then he sends it over to Obi-Wan. And it's like, oh. So there's a way to establish how much of this is in his blood.
See, it's interesting because since like this was my introduction, I was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, it's a biological thing. Like that's always been how it's been for me. So like I didn't have that mysticism tie.
Well, and you had this whole spiel that Obi-Wan does in A New Hope, the original trilogy, episode 4, where he's like, the Force is all around you, Luke. Just feel it. You know? Like it seemed like yeah. It was something that just went.
No, I was just like, so does that mean he's like swimming in midichlorians? I don't feel
that's
like I
what understand. I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense. And so they're like, oh, you biologically become a Jedi. It's not something that's just like you study and become. You have to be born into it. It's like the economy nowadays.
We're all sad.
What about you, Spence? What was some of your high notes or low notes for this particular trilogy?
Yeah, I know we've mostly been talking about episode 1. But yeah, the whole all of 2, really. Because like
oh my gosh.
Like 2 dragged for me. Like I was like, I don't know if I can do this franchise with 2. Like 3 kind of brought some of it back. I was like, okay, I can.
Yeah.
But like honestly, like delete Jar Jar, delete most of 2, and I'd be a lot happier. Like because both those things existing just made me sad until 7, 8, 9.
What about you, Amy?
So
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. So you're saying there's no high points for you?
No. Most of my high points were pod racing and, as you mentioned, the fight in at the end of episode one. I did. I'm sorry. I did like the fight scene between Anakin and Obi-Wan in the third episode, where he tells Anakin that I have the high ground, Anakin.
He just and wanted
every that child on top of a playground said that quote at least once.
Winnie the Pooh says that quote.
He does. That's a meme. That never actually happens.
It happens in Christopher Robin.
That's a meme, man.
He says it because he's on top of a shelf.
I believe it.
I will play it for you.
Were you not there for the
later
review? Did you not be? Were you not in that review?
Yeah, I don't remember that movie that well.
But he says Christopher Robin.
He does not say I have the high ground. What is wrong with you?
Now he's got
the high ground, Christopher Robin.
But he says it in his Pooh Bear voice.
He does not say that in his Pooh. You know what?
This is for after.
You were saying the high
lava
ground
castles.
Lava castle.
Yeah, just Anakin with his chopped off legs. Like the whole.
I hate you.
Like that was just unsettling because he was just like turning into like this evil mom. Also,
he looked like an overdone slice of pizza right there at that point.
Like the whole flip to evil's like that was so fast, except kind of not really, but also very fast.
Can we dial it back a bit from that particular scene and go to the whole like the meat of this movie is about a predator like just lusting after an older woman who wants nothing to do with him. And she essentially just concedes, I guess, out of just desperation of thinking, well, if I can't destroy him, join him kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a bad take.
Like, so in episode one, The Phantom Menace, he is supposed to be 11. She is supposed to
He's supposed
14.
To be, I thought he was supposed to be 9.
Is it 9?
I thought it was 9.
I thought it was 11.
She was 14. But the thing is that
Natalie Portman does not look 14.
But when she was in full makeup, we could pretend that she might, you know, be.
She was born in 1981.
Dang, she
so
older than
if
me.
So 9, what, Phantom Menace came out in 99, so she was at least 18. Trying to play a 14-year-old.
See that? That makes a lot more sense. Why I was confused on that.
Yeah, don't worry, we all were.
and it's like it that whole movie, like you were saying, the quote, like sand gets everywhere, blah blah blah. Like it's that whole sequence with them and her, like him feeding her pears from across the table, like.
It's like, look, I'm being romantic with my Jedi powers.
I honestly don't think I've seen that movie since I've
there
been in
you
theaters.
Go safe like, safety safety thy name is Spencer yes.
So what were some of your Amy what were some of your high or low points?
Well, considering this was the first movie, Phantom Menace was the first movie that I saw on a midnight showing. It was my very very first one, so where I was out past, you know, curfew. Yes, it was sad in what came out of it, but the way that it actually inspired me and taught me about fandoms was something really cool. Mm. Everyone was so hyped. It was.
Oh, I bet so.
That's yeah, awesome. Everyone was in cosplay. Yeah. They were lined up all outside the theater. Everybody was in your rows. There were people that were having lightsaber battles and quotes, and there was somebody that brought their clarinet, no joke, and they started playing the Cantina song. Everyone, it was electric, like opening night for an Avengers movie, electric. And this was 99. Everybody
you're
gets
looking
in
at
there.
What's this? So 83. So what's that? 16, 15 years later?
Yeah. And there were little kids. There was grown adults. There was an old couple that was dressed up like Han and Leia. And I was just like, this is adorable. And they were sitting on their little roll things. But so it was so electrifying to see the community come together for something that they loved. Now, I say that because this poor community has dealt with quite a bit. The cheering in certain spaces I will always remember in that movie. The Duel of the Fates. The being able to see the council actually sitting there. Like you talked about the Jedi Council, and then you see them and you're like, oh, and there's Yoda actually on the Jedi Council. And then you had Mace Windu, who everyone's like, what? there's a black guy, and you're like, surprise! The galaxy! Surprise, the galaxy!
Died.
And then you had Yaddle, which nobody talks about Yaddle.
That's because I don't even think anybody else knows Yaddle is in the movie.
It's another Yoda-esque person.
That yeah, we've seen I completely in one forgot part. About him until you said the word Yaddle.
Yes, yes. But there was so many... The Watto. Watto was difficult.
Oh, yeah, the blue bug.
The one that everybody now says is what happens to Gonzo if he's on crack.
That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Except he doesn't fly.
But so, yeah. So that being said, low points across this one. The Immaculate Conception.
Where Anakin is born out of the amount of midichlorians.
There was no father.
Which makes sense. Which it's like, okay, so does that make... What is her name? Shima or
yeah, something like that.
Baby. Yeah, she had a little. So apparently,
there's a force baby.
There's a force baby somewhere that just is born, and Anakin's mom isn't like force sensitive,
right? See, and that was the thing. So, and I had brought this up to you, so I was kind of mad that she did my midichlorian thing.
Shmi. What about me?
Shmi. Thanks, Bob. We miss you, Bob Hoskins.
Anakin's mom is named Shmi.
But so, the midichlorians, I will always complain about that. It took away the opportunity for everyone who was like, I can be a Jedi if I just, you know, believe and feel the Force versus it became an X gene. You had to have.
Yeah.
You had to have the juice already inherited to be
The juice. You needed the juice.
Well, like, let's even talk about Harry Potter. You didn't have to be, you know, a full blood or have it passed down. You could just spring up a well and be a wizard.
Spring up a well?
Splish, splash, drip, drop.
What in the world?
That's wizard powers right there. So that took away...
Spring up a well.
That took away a lot of that opportunity for people just to kind of believe. The Padawan master relationship between Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi was awesome.
I really wanted more of that, like, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to see Qui-Gon... I essentially, because this is at the height of Liam Neeson's career, if we're going to be honest, Liam Neeson was an exceptional Jedi Master, and I would have loved to have seen, because you come to find out Qui-Gon cannot stand drawing in the lines. He has to work outside the parameters of what the Jedi Council recommends. And you come to realize that more and more throughout the film, and even afterwards, when you watch things like the Clone Wars, or you see like Rebels, or you see, you know, all the other films, subsequent films that follow it, you're like, oh, you know, Qui-Gon was pretty sick. Like, this dude was awesome. And learning the history of, like, a lot of these Jedi, some of the most impactful ones were the ones who kind of drew outside the lines. And so it sucks that, you know, Qui-Gon was the one who had to go in that film. I don't know what the thinking was, but I guess if you want to further along the Obi-Wan and Anakin dynamic, yeah, but...
Well, it was so... Even with Duel of the Fates, the sequence with the security gates, I remember that so vividly.
Yeah.
And watching young Obi-Wan, good job, Ewan, doing the run, and then he had to stop, and he's standing there and he's pacing versus Qui-Gon, who was sitting and meditating. And it was so... The way it was staged and shot was so methodical that I just remember it. And then... Hearing, like, there wasn't any other sound aside from the clashing of the lightsabers and the hum of the security gates, and how on edge you are and how hopeful you are, and then cut down and you're like, oh, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
So, like, it in that we go to two beautiful sets, beautiful costumes, hot trash. Yeah,
100%.
I loved seeing Amidala. I loved finding out about Naboo. Like, I loved those portions, but it was like, do you want a wolf story? And I'm like, no, I don't. Leave me alone. And then she's like, Anakin, I'm pregnant. And we're like,
in three. It's like, How much time? I don't know if this Clone War lasted this long, but I mean, I guess if you had guys had time to...
Like, who doesn't know this homeboy has been sneaking off to impregnate people?
That's another thing. I mean, these people are supposed to be Force-sensitive.
What about his pat? Like,
his emotions were supposed to, like, betray him. It didn't make any sense every time he walked into that Jedi Council room.
The thing is with the Jedi Council is that they're stupid. Like,
they're except adorable for Mace and stupid. Windu. Except for me, yeah.
But, like... Like, why? Force powers! Why are you not catching on? He's
like,
hey,
do what you gotta do, motherfucker. Like, seriously. Like, he's probably like, I've got music tail on the side, too. What you doing? Like, it's Samuel L. Jackson. I'm pretty sure they probably would have.
I don't know
it.
Why we haven't had a series that follows him around.
There's
well,
a comic book?
Technically, yeah, there's a comic book. And there's a guy on YouTube right now called Jedi Theory or Sith Theory. I know I'm probably wrong, but
he, like, Jedi Theory was Collider, so I was like, mm?
Yeah, no, I think we were, yeah, we were talking about that last time. That's probably why I got it mixed up. Either way, he does this whole YouTube channel, and he, out of his own pocket, has created these films that he wants to get put on YouTube.
The Obi-Wan one. So cool.
No, that's not him. But that's him. Actually, it's the guy who plays something Costas. He's a voice impersonator who does a really great Han Solo. But either way, the guy from YouTube, actually creates a movie, like a couple of short films, that follow the early career of Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. And in one of his films, it alludes that Mace actually survived that fall and has survived Order 66 and is on the hunt for Vader.
So, I like it.
It's actually not bad. I haven't seen, because I know they did the first two. I haven't seen the third one yet. So
okay.
So just wrapping up. So hot trash second. Beautiful outfits. Beautiful scenery. I didn't need a love story. I didn't need to see him trying to surf a land pig. Didn't help. Okay. That's the one where they go on the picnic.
Oh yeah, that was really weird. Yep. Like goes around a corner and then whatever he does.
It's like a land pig. We get to three, and Anakin, you're breaking my heart, man. It was terrible
for chief women and the children too.
And then, do we even want to talk about the younglings?
Oh, I'm sorry. Here's the thing:
you were a teacher. No. And he's like, "There were."
I think I remember more of the robot chicken spoofs on that than I actually do the scene where it's just that whole scene where he kills all the kids, and you know he kills all the kids. Igniting his lightsaber and scaring the poop out of that little child.
The one that was like, so... was like, what's
Master
going on?
Master Anakin, help? Is everything okay? It's like...
And there was no escaping that. That just... it hurt. I didn't care that he killed him. I was just like, you just... The poor little kid's like, hello? Can you help me? And we're like, oh, wrong person to ask.
So...
And also when he was like, you know, the burnt, you know, kimchi dog... on his mountain of lava castle land. It was amazing. I trusted you.
Did you just say burnt kimchi dog?
Yep.
It's stinky. It's ripe.
Okay.
It's laying in the sun.
And then you get that wonderful reminder of the no by Darth
that
Vader.
Was so...
In your rage, you killed her.
I like that it's like, he's like, I got mad. And I didn't save the lady I love, but I wasn't going to be able to keep her anyway. And we're like, surprise.
In terms of story, compared to, but in line of everything else that happens in 4, 5, and 6, is it consistent with what we feel kind of goes with the Star Wars universe? Let's start with you, Amy, because Spencer's still thinking.
So, is it consistent? I mean,
does it do a decent job of staying within the lines of George Lucas's vision from the original?
Much like Qui-Gon Jinn, it colors outside the lines to try to get to where it needs to go. And unlike Qui-Gon Jinn, it fails.
Really?
So it gives you the backstory, but we also knew where the end, like where it was going.
Yeah.
So it was literally like, how many ways are you trying to get to the grocery store? Could they go? Did they stop over to get some ice cream? On the way to the grocery store, and then, oops, they might have had an accident, spilled it in the car, and had to stop at the car detail. Like, it felt like there were so many which ways to Sunday to get to the grocery store that is the originals, that there were things where I'm like, there are moments that needed to be expounded upon. Qui-Gon Jinn is a perfect example of that. And there were ones that really didn't. I dating on Naboo seems lovely, but until you make that a possibility for us mere mortals, I don't want to see people getting their groove thing on.
What about you, Spence?
Oh, I think you just... That's exactly the problem. Like, it's somehow not enough time and too much on certain things. Now, also, I started here. So, like, for me, at this point, I was like, okay, like, this is what Star Wars is. And my opinion evolved from there as I got more familiar with 4, 5, 6 and as 7, 8, 9 came out. Because, surprisingly, probably, my opinion went up after some of these ones.
And we'll talk about that in a second.
It's just like the only time I've retroactively improved.
I need to go back to these movies. I think they're actually better. Hold on, let me just.
But not two. I like.
Nope.
No.
Here's the thing. When some of the most profound people who actually know Star Wars develop a method where to get the gist
you don't
of
watch it in order,
where you to get the full gist of the Star Wars experience, you actually have to omit one of the films from the original trilogy to make the whole thing make sense. That kind of says something. And as a trilogy, it does do a lot more to create fan service, to add more sellability to the marketing of the actual.
You have to remove one of the original from the trilogy? I thought it was from the prequel.
No, that's what I said, from the prequel. Sorry.
Oh, so it's an original. I got scared. I was
from
like,
the trilogy, from this trilogy.
Yeah, from the prequel trilogy, you have to take something out to get it organized.
If you're looking at the machete method, it's you watch 4, 5, and after the reveal of Anakin being the father, you watch 2, 3, and then you watch 6. Yeah. So.
And even then.
And even then, it's like, grit your teeth for number 2. Yeah, I really feel like George Lucas was moving in a direction that just kind of seemed a little bit more keeping his, you know, his hand in the money pot kind of thing. Because like the Jar Jar Binks dolls, the Qui-Gon dolls, all the new toys that came out, the remasterings, the pod racing video games, the all the stuff that came about, the new play structures and things like that, like that little play sets and things. I just really felt like it was more along the lines of creating a, I don't know, just a more, hey, I'm still relevant kind of hand in the air. So I don't really know how consistent it stays with the whole fan base, with the whole storyline. And in terms of fan base, I really do think this is where we began to see the divide for a lot of people. Old fans of Star Wars were like, this isn't my Star Wars. This isn't what I remember from the first trilogy. This isn't in line with that heart. And then there's new people like you, Spence, who saw it and you're like, oh, I guess let's see what this is all about. And then you see the ruin, like, duff, what is this? And you're looking back, and then obviously you see the sequel and you're like, okay, it's okay, buddy. But I really feel like in terms of its helping build on that fan base, I really do think it did kind of hurt it. I don't know, what do you think, Amy?
No, I agree. It definitely, like I said, taking the trip to the grocery store, it stopped way too many times and lost passengers. There wasn't enough cool lightsaber battles.
Yes.
No. You're welcome.
Yep.
I'm like, you're going to hurt yourself. You're going to chop off a hand, and then we're going to have that talk. There led to so many. Are you just. Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
There led to so many people who became like, oh, they're Star Wars. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, it hurt. There was an EU created. There are video games. There were people that were after every doll. And this is literally the prequel trilogy is the black sheep.
And you actually bring up a really great point. Like, from 1983 all the way until 1999... fan fiction was rampant mm-hmm. for the Star Wars universe, and because of the fact that it wasn't the intellectual property of it did not maintain around fan fiction novels, actual authors were creating fan fiction pieces for this saga and actually creating some pretty cool stuff. I mean, this is out of the fan fiction extended universe. This is where we got things like Admiral Thrawn, who is one of the most intellectually scary people to have ever come across the Star Wars landscape. And thankfully, you know, Disney did make efforts to bring Admiral Thrawn into the animated series and hopefully into the film series soon. And he's already got like 3 or 4 books out. Yeah. But yeah, there's been a ton of information already prior to, and taking a look at all that and being like, nah, I'm going to do something better. And then giving us this, which I don't know if you guys know. Did you know Jar Jar Binks was actually supposed to be a Sith Lord?
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, too. I heard that story.
The disdain on Spencer's face right now.
He and I think we're in the same.
I'm just reporting the news. Don't hate the messenger.
Like that comes across as like I have to believe that's fake because
the guy himself has come out and said it.
Like I don't care.
Guy had his character's head on a stick. I think that needs to tell us all we need to know about Jar Jar Binks.
Because honestly, that is such an insane idea
that it just might work. I know, right? Just
that's why Nisa give all the power to the Senate.
Look at his face.
All right, let's get into Jar Jar. Here's the thing.
Oh boy.
When he opened his mouth for the first time, I was like,
we got Jamaicans in Star Wars, man.
No, that's not what I got away from. See, here's the thing. My mom, especially, like I was very, I was raised on, like, you know, African American history and, like, you know, the whole slave thing. So I thought what
the
they were
slave thing.
That's the best way I can put it. Like, that's like,
you mean actual slavery?
Yeah. Like, so I thought, like, they were trying to say something like that, like, you know, he's part of some sort of slave race. I was very confused about what they were trying to say about Jar Jar.
Were you expecting them to, like, come out of the water all in chains, like, wading in the water?
Kinda, actually.
Well, did we notice he was the only one that talked?
Yeah, and I was like,
what do you mean he's the only one that talked? They all talk.
No, they talk, but
from his species,
yeah,
he's the only one that has enough. No.
The king did.
That's all I remember.
That's all I remember.
Misa, like, he talked. I mean, didn't talk well, just he talked. Are you saying that Jar Jar Binks is the most intellectual one of these, what was their race?
Who cares? The Gungans.
Gungans. You remembered.
It was weird.
Something.
You remembered. You remembered the Gungans.
Did anyone say why they decided to transfer off of this insane idea of making him Darth Plagueis or whatever he was supposed to be?
I think because of the direction the first film was going, I think they said that they decided to transition to make Jar Jar more of a, like, family-friendly character that everybody could want to have dolls of.
No, everybody hated him already. They might have just...
He's the one who enacted this whole nonsense!
He gave the power to the Senate.
Because, in either version of the movie, he's still the worst person in the movie! How did they make him better? They made him moderately less worse. Oh, and no, that's, like, even a maybe.
He's even worse in the animated series.
He comes back?
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. He's in the Clone Wars.
Why?
I'm just... Hey, shoot the messenger.
Even I'm like, no.
Why would... What year did that come out? Like, 07 or something?
Clone Wars kept going, though.
The Clone Wars series?
Like, when did it start?
We got Ahsoka Tano out of that.
Here's the thing. Whatever the gap is... 2008 is what I see right there.
Yeah.
That's too many years for you to be like, we can salvage this character.
Let's bring Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, like, no.
Oh, wait, that's the film. Where's the series?
I don't want to know.
Either way, the answer is not 1999. And, like, there is so much time for you to learn. People hate this guy. Let's not put him in more things.
Oh, he was in more things.
Oh,
he was definitely
in more things. Why?
I like to just believe he fell off. one of those cliffs, or one of those battle droids just rolled up and was like, pew, 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 and he gone.
Just like that? Like, pew, no, pew, pew, pew?
Because, like, you know what happened the first time that happened? Like, he was just so klutzy he survived.
I mean, it's either that or the stormtroopers just come in. And then you have one of those Roger Rabbit moments with Jar Jar, and you're like, you gonna die, still. No, he's the hot mess of the character. Like, without him, maybe we could have gotten away with, you know, not as many bad things happening to the Republic.
Hey, he did the voice of him in the actual cartoon, too.
The thing is, without Jar Jar, like, literally the original trilogy doesn't happen.
Well, let's transition over to something a little bit more different. The sequel trilogy. So the sequel trilogy itself. Let's see, when did this begin?
We're going to Jakku. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I believe the sequel trilogy started
It went somewhere.
Well, yeah. 2015. So 2015 brought us The Force Awakens, and then shortly thereafter we got The Last Jedi, and then The Rise of Skywalker, which the Rise of Skywalker was 2 years ago, 2019. So
really,
I believe so.
It's way okay, too Ben recent. Kenobi.
Yeah, December 20th, 2019, The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, I thought you meant the one before that,
The Last Jedi.
Yeah,
2017.
Okay, there we go.
What's that now? So now we're moving into the modern era, the last decade of Star Wars films, quoted to be the final films of the Star Wars saga, or the Skywalker saga, if you will. You had directors J.J. Abrams do both 7 and 9, and then you had Rian Johnson do 8. Unpopular opinion, and this is going to kind of open the can of worms that I am hoping it does, because I want Spencer's thoughts. Unpopular opinion, I actually liked Episode 8. The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. Directed by Rian Johnson, because of the fact that I feel like Rian Johnson decided that he didn't want the entire saga to just hinge on another Skywalker, which, I mean, he made every effort to do that, because not only did he remove any Skywalker from the film after that, other than, and Kylo's not even a Skywalker, he's a Solo.
Yeah.
But he also made sure that the lineage of whoever Daisy Ridley's Rey is has no attachment to anybody in the entire previous Star Wars saga.
We almost got away with it, too.
Almost got away with it. If it wasn't for
that meddling Abrams.
But you actually have a different opinion.
Well, I thought I agree with what you just said right there. Like, I didn't need for Daisy Ridley's Rey to be a Skywalker. I would be, like, because that would have been way too much. Like, I agree with that. I disagree with everything else that's attached to it.
To Episode 8.
Yeah, because, like, it's so much backtracking. I personally don't really enjoy that movie except for one scene in the movie.
I know.
Yeah, well, I have to make sure I put it back in here. But, because, like, I was like, okay, I need to rewatch Episode 8 and 9. And, like, I turned on Episode 8 and the text scroll started. And I was like, I can't do it. I can't go back to this. And I turned it off.
Here's the thing. Eight is a lot like Episode 1. It's
better than Episode
1. No. There are similarities, because there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of drawn out parts that just don't really go anywhere. There's a few key parts that you're like,
we're going to casino, yeah, bros.
Yeah, it's like, that, like, there's a lot of parts that didn't make sense, but some of the key things in there are some of the most, like, standout-ish moments in the entire sequel trilogy.
Fish nun nurses on an island.
You got the instance of, like, Mark Hamill, you know, Luke's final battle, even if it was his Force ghost. That was in that one.
Oh, okay.
With all the diamond foxes. You got all of... Was that in that one or The Force Awakens? No, yeah, it wasn't that one, because The Force Awakens is with the planet killer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you
Starbase
get
killer.
The Starbase killer. And then you got the really great instance of introducing the fact that there's no Skywalker hold on the main protagonist. Mm. Because one of the biggest issues that everybody was having with the sequel trilogy was like, oh, well, she's probably going to be like, you know, Han's other daughter, or he's probably going to be Luke's daughter because she has that, you know, thing with Mara, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, everybody that I knew of was hoping that there was no tie to anything, and just creating a unique introduction into the saga so that way we can start moving away from the Skywalker name.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
Now, and there's a couple other really cool parts, but now the parts that really drew out of that, like, I absolutely couldn't stand Oscar Isaac's whole storyline in that one. Like,
you mean
the wine,
hissy fit?
Yeah, the hissy fit kind of thing. I didn't like the Rose Tico and John Boyega's little field trip to the casino and getting, you know, bamboozled by Benicio Del Toro.
It made no sense.
Yeah, and was ultimately pointless.
Yeah.
Except for that one child in the stables.
Well, and then you finally get to see some, like, unique opportunities with Captain Phasma, and then come to find out she dies. Like, yeah. She falls through the cracks in the ship. But the crack that was caused by one of your favorite scenes.
Oh, yes. The Holdo maneuver. Everything else about her, I don't like. But, like, this one thing was so cinematically breathtaking, where she just, like, hyperdrives into the enemy ship, and, like, you just see it, like, fracture. I was like, that was masterclass right there. I love that part. I will keep that part. Like, if you got me, like, a canvas of that, I've put it on my wall. I loved it.
For Christmas.
Vin Diesel shows up on a Scooty Puff Jr. I ain't got friends. I got family.
But, like, that was, like, one of the most beautiful parts of the movie for me.
And I think the biggest part... The biggest part of the movie for me, for that particular film, was the execution, if you will, of who is the beef jerky guy? The guy who looked like a walking... played by Andy Serkis.
Del Toro.
No. No.
Sorry, we got a snort.
You
made me snort.
What was it?
It was Andy Serkis playing Andy Serkis in space.
Well, yeah, okay,
it's
Andy Serkis.
It was Simon Pegg as...
Supreme Leader Snoke. Supreme Snoke.
That's right. He was missing part of his skull.
Yeah. I feel like the removal of him in the movie, first off, after you've established that Rey has no ties to anybody, then you remove the largest antagonist in the film therein, leaving the biggest rift being symbolized by this ship being cut in twain, is going to be between Rey and Kylo. I thought that was, like, super smart. Going the direction of establishing that, you know what, you don't need to have a huge villain in order for you to create Star Wars cinematic gold. What you need to do is recognize the forces that are currently working, create these two people who essentially, like Obi-Wan and Anakin, have a moment where this beautiful relationship that could have become friends or could have become something more is now fractured. And these are the paths that these two are taking, you know? And I really thought, I'm like, as a director, Rian Johnson is hitting on some really, really cool themes here, because he's taking the saga in a direction nobody else is brave enough to do so. Hmm. Was it that one where the ancient tree gets burned?
Mm-hmm.
It's that one.
Yeah.
And we get the awesome reappearance of Yoda,
yep,
voiced by Frank Oz, the man.
Well, and then in that one, and I can totally agree that of the sequel trilogy, that one is one of my favorites. It gives you the lore of the Jedi and her, like, it's not just the text, it's not just the island, I like that literally they couldn't get the puffins out of all the shots, so they're like, we're making a creature. And I'm like, that's how you do it, people. They're annoying, but fix it. Like, there was so much opportunity. I had hopes going into the last one, so The Rise of Skywalker, that Rose was going to play a more important part. Yeah, they had to go to the casino and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And everybody got all up in their Ghibli nuggets about the problem with going like, no, Finn and Rey are supposed to be together. And I'm just like, look, stop shipping people. Just let them live their intergalactic lives in peace, okay? But it was the confrontation for the quote-unquote dark side that we see there. Where everybody's like, I never want to drink blue milk again. Like,
well, technically it was green milk.
Yeah, but he...
Regardless.
It made everybody go, no. But so it was...
Like, with as much of that was all over, like, Mark Hamill's face and everything, I'm like, no, I'm okay.
But I loved being able to see in this where she's like, I'm optimism, and he's like, kid, I've been around too long. No. Like, there was such great beats and such great moments. And yes, there was some shenanigans that, like, you're like, and everything's falling apart. And why are we doing this? But of them, it was where I didn't have to worry about her being a Skywalker. It was, she brought back this hope that it wasn't a midichlorian count. The little kid at the end of the movie moving the broom, it gave this opportunity for people to again believe that you could believe in the Force and you could be a Jedi. Mm. And then
because we bring it over to Rise. That itself alone negates almost to a certain extent everything George Lucas had tried to set up in the prequel trilogy, you know, and creating an opportunity where the Clone Wars animated show as well as the Star Wars Rebels animated show have made huge strides in recognizing there are other Jedi that are still viable heroes in this world.
Just because you're a Skywalker doesn't mean you're the be-all, end-all for the Force.
And they establish it in, which one was it? Was it the second one?
Clone Wars?
Was it the first one?
For what?
I think it was in the last one. I might be just kind of... The Ghost, which is the ship that they use in Star Wars Rebels, makes another appearance in...
Oh, it's in the last one.
The Rise of Skywalker.
It's in the big portal. It's the Avengers Assemble sequence, but for Rise of Skywalker.
But, I mean, even in that, I mean, you could have introduced Ezra Bridger. Yep. You could have introduced, like, General Syndulla and Zeb and all them. Or you could have even done something where Kanan, you know, the Jedi Master Kanan somehow comes back and he's a blind, you know, a Jedi Master, much like Chirrut from Rogue One.
Which was amazing as standalone just Star Wars story.
Well, technically Chirrut isn't a Jedi Master.
He's a
Guardian of the Wills. He's a Guardian of the Wills.
It's okay.
He's the guardian of the teachings of the Jedi Temple.
So the thing I think that I come at this is that the sequel where suddenly the shipping of so many people, regardless of it being thruples or not.
Thruples?
People were like, it needs to be Finn and...
Finn and Rey need to have just their own love space fest.
That was their entire thing, like going into Rise of Skywalker, that because they basically were like, they were functioning in the space of like, there was tension, but not tension, and it was for all of them. Like, there were so many shenanigans that I kept hearing.
There's a deleted scene where they become Mormons.
So many Mormons, so little time. But like, there were so many good things, and then there was like the Kylo and Rey suddenly, because they're not brother and sister, suddenly there's a romantic entanglement, and I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, okay, he can get into your head, like, that's uncomfortable. How many times did you like go to the bathroom? He's like, hey, what you doing? And she's just like, get out of my head. Get out of my head. This is private time, Kylo. Like, it's just nuts. And...
Well, nuts is an understatement because it got creepy.
Yes.
Because in the end of The Last Jedi, you got a distinct rift between the two, and you're like, okay, these two, there's no love loss here. They're just at ends, like they're opposite ends of like of each other, and they're both looking on two separate sides of the spectrum. Like I said, very much symbolized by the huge crack in the ship that you know, Vin Diesel slash Holdo did, you know, with their maneuver. I think one of the worst things to come out of the sequel trilogy is how much not only that they backpedaled from what was established in the second film, but also how much they kind of like made fun of the second one.
Yep.
In the third movie. And it was like, all right, we're gonna do a bunch of fan service, we're gonna, you know, make all this stuff, and then we're gonna do a throwback scene, and then at the end of it all, you know, we're just gonna make fun of everything that Rian Johnson did, because, you know what, it doesn't matter, we're blah blah blah. And I don't know if it's a J.J. Abrams decision on that or if it was a studio decision on that, but in the end the movie did not land for me as a whole.
I was like, waiting for that scavenger lady to go dig up those lightsabers when she saw her put them in there and be like, "Ooh, good. Congratulations, person who's decided on their name. So you live around here? No? Okay, that's cool." And I'd just be like hiding behind the hut and be like,
Right. I'd, look, somebody delivered the beef jerky.
Oh, gosh. Never going to live it down. Never.
What about you, Spence? How do you feel about how the way just the whole trilogy, the sequel trilogy, transpired?
It was awful. Like, just shockingly bad, really. Because, yeah, with episode 8 just going around and being like, none of this matters, and just throwing tables across the room of Star Wars, and then 9 coming around being like, you know what, none of that matters. It was like I was watching a fight from inside yes. of corporate about what is Star Wars, especially this one. This is the only time I've ever seen a movie where I feel like two people are talking to each other and I can't hear them. And this is what is the end product. It's two films that are somehow in conflict with each other, just screaming like, I know what I'm doing. And like, no, you don't. I do. And it was so wildly confusing to watch, especially with the out-of-nowhere romance between Kylo and Rey.
Mm-hmm. Which made no sense.
Drove me crazy. Because, like, I 9 made me so actively angry just watching it. I was like, I'm just glad it's over. And when she said that her last name was Skywalker at the end of the movie, I was like, go home, Ray, you're drunk. Because clearly that's the only answer here. I am looking forward to another set of trilogy movies, and if I hear the utterance of the word Skywalker, I will get up and leave.
And that's the worst part, I think, about that, the whole sequel trilogy. The fact that they felt the need to bring it back around to that incestuous kiss.
Yeah.
Where you have Rey announcing her last name, and then you have Luke and Leia looking on as Force ghosts. Like,
she yep, was Organa. We made that,
uh-huh.
Like, that, I think, was one of the biggest slaps in the face for me, is that she picked a Skywalker instead of Organa.
Like, what if it was just Rey?
Well, she's Prince of the Star Wars universe. She's just Rey. Like, she could have. But the thing was that it felt that it was kind of like, now you need to make sure that, you know, her not family is watching over her. Like, come on. It was not necessary. It wasn't even, like, it made no sense. And she didn't get as much leadership as she, from Luke, thank you, Mark Hamill, you're amazing still, that she got from General
Leia.
General Organa. And, like, understanding that the person who was the other option, who had always been force sensitive, which freaked everybody out when she floated back in.
Mary Poppins.
She's like, peace, you think you gonna kill me? Like, that made me so proud, because especially with the passing of Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
That sequence, I was so upset, because I was like, they can't do her dirty like this. They can't just, you know, have her explode out. And then she came back in and I was like, you go. You go, girl. Do exactly what you were supposed to do all of those years ago. And then she just basically is like, whatever. I'm a Skywalker. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're not even close. Your great-grandpapa is, like, attached to a marionette stringy thing. And like, even, he looked like bait.
And even
he
so,
was a tackle box.
Like, here's the thing. I wouldn't have been mad if she had said Palpatine.
Well, somebody would have been like, Palpatine.
But to create a new name for that, like, to give a new image to that last name that used to strike fear across the galaxy, being able to say, hey, this is who I am, but it doesn't define me as a person. To give it an opportunity for her to say, this is my title, but this is not who I am, you know, would have been interesting in a psychological kind of way to give people a chance to say, you know what? It really doesn't matter what name they have. It doesn't matter if she's a Skywalker or Organa or a Palpatine or a Solo or a Calrissian. You know,
that she's not a Binks.
Or Binks. There you go.
I would knock her down more for a Binks. To see
if she had said Binks, though, all of us would have started laughing so much. It would have been amazing. Who are
you? Misa Ray. Binks.
Ray Binks.
Misa, go by now.
I would have died.
She could have been a Fett. She could have been anybody else.
Oh, God, not a Fett.
She could have been a Tano.
Ah, that wouldn't have worked. Because Ahsoka never really laid down any roots. And that would have meant that she would have had
But this is the thing that in claiming the Skywalker lineage, affixing it to herself like a poo cape that it was. Like a poo cape. She basically, like, let it be known there's just still a Skywalker around. Like, she decided to take up the mantle of Skywalker and laid claim. Like, that old lady, if she doesn't come to dig up the lightsabers, there's going to be whispers and rumors that there's a Skywalker around. And everyone's going to tie it back to Luke. They're not going to think about Leia. They're not going to even think about Darth Vader. Like, seriously. They're going to be like, oh, there's a Jedi Master around. Oh, there's a Jedi Master Skywalker. Like... Well, make your own way. You did this entire jam about who you are, independent. Look at me and my portions. Me and BB.
My portions.
Like, me and Dio.
Simon Pegg. You know Simon, that was Simon Pegg,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
He was the big guy that was like, quarter portion.
Shoot, even Lin-Manuel Miranda, like, did his work to get in the background.
Spencer saw that finally.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh. Lots of people in the background.
She decided to take up the mantle unnecessarily to get the clout of the name. And basically, in and of that, like, no, I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't need it.
Do you guys think that because of the conclusion of these films in this sequel trilogy, do you feel like the fan base has become more definitive? Or do you think it's become stronger? Do you think it's become more toxic? Amy's shaking her head furiously. What do you think over there?
Toxic, 100%. Yeah. The divide came with the prequel, but the sequel suddenly, with the excitement, like the excitement of having something new or going, oh, I wonder what storyline they're going to do. Like, oh, are they going to mention this? All of that joy was taken away the moment they decided that we needed to ship people. Like that they the same thing that they had with the prequel trilogy. As soon as people got romantic or there was quote unquote romantic inclinations, they took away the ability for the community to celebrate the art that is and has always been the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
There has been a great many strides across other non-movie to television, comics, books. I don't know.
The Vader Down series in the comics is really great.
The Dr. Aphra is amazing. Yeah. There's an entire like limited series for Princess Leia that I will always recommend to people. Yeah. 100%. There's a Kanan and an Ezra book. There's an Obi-Wan. Like, I can keep talking. There's comic books. Everyone has been trying to fix, and not even fix, but celebrate this community. Filoni and Favreau have been doing that and excited the fan base for Star Wars stories. Not Skywalker stories, but yeah. Star Wars stories. But it's created such a divide with the people that have been just holding out hope and holding out a candle for people to celebrate a universe that started in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah. What do you think, Spence?
Now that you've said that, it makes me really wish that there's no love story in the next one. Like,
I'm praying that there's no love story in the next one. Like, I that's one of the things like I appreciated about The Mandalorian. There was no focus of a love story. It's just the story of
the single dad trying to make his way with his green kid.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Spence.
Yeah, actually, like The Mandalorian kind of is the path forward for Star Wars, if you ask me.
Hopefully.
Like, we need more stories that are just about like people in this universe. That, like, people aren't getting all, like, I'm going to send a death threat to this person because I didn't like what story they made. Like, that's just so insane to me. Like,
yeah.
I don't understand where your priorities are, where you think that's okay, you know? So I'm just kind of hoping that we've learned literally anything from this experience.
That would be a first. I mean,
there was even a stinking love story in Solo, for crying out sakes.
Well, that kind of made sense about
that. But think about it.
No, we don't. We don't talk.
Well, but let's also think about Rogue One as a story, just as a Star Wars story.
No,
that's why it's called a Star Wars story.
Yes, but in movie, and then we get Solo. There was no romance in
Rogue One. Rogue really makes it seem like they're bad at romance.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Rogue One. So Rogue One technically had somewhat of a romance.
Nah.
It was Cassian and what's her name?
Really?
They kiss at the very end as they're getting.
Because you're gonna die.
I mean, you're gonna mac up to somebody. I mean, be like, do you know what? I appreciate this journey.
Kylo was about to die. Kylo did die at the end of that kiss.
He also. They did the dumb like. I'm so excited to see you. Let's have a million lifetimes together. Smile it. And a smile oh and like, God. Oh my God. Now you're dead. Oh no.
Yeah. Spoiler
so
alert.
So sad.
I feel like the sequel trilogy should be the last straw for Star Wars, Lucasfilms, Disney, whomever the brand is under, like the title. As to what direction they shouldn't go towards because of the fact, I have to agree. The fan base is definitively split. We actually had, back when it was me and Chad was unavailable, and I think you were with family or something, when The Last Jedi came out. I brought on a guy that I used to work with, hardcore Star Wars fan. He was at some of the first screenings of the original trilogy. He's got canisters of some of the first trilogy. So huge, huge, huge fan. He came on and said, honestly, if this keeps going the way it's going, I don't think I can be a fan anymore.
That's super understandable.
Like, earnestly, just for someone who has spent 30, 40 years having nothing else of a fandom other than Star Wars to look me square in the eyes and to say definitively, I don't know if it keeps going like this, I don't know if I can keep being a fan. You know, I don't know if I can be a fan anymore. And it's like, how bad and how so far off the track do you have to be to where somebody who has lived through the prequels and is like, I'm still here. I know they messed up. It's okay. I don't think about Jar Jar. You know, he's just on my dartboard kind of thing. How bad, how off track do you have to be to make somebody like that who is so forgiving of what they've done thus far to say, nope, I can't. I can't do it anymore. You know?
How far off track do you have to be to make Jar Jar Binks look like a good idea?
Ooh, that is...
That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, and lots of people have... There's the People versus George Lucas, which is a documentary about Star Wars fans who have been disgruntled because George Lucas came out with 4, 5, and 6 and all these amazing things, and they went to go see one, like Phantom Menace, and they thought that Jar Jar Binks essentially was part of the, it was a cash grab, that it wasn't celebrating the universe that he created, that it was a big middle finger to everybody, because it's like, I'm going to put somebody, like, he breaks the fourth wall, not more than once, if I remember correctly. I haven't gone back. But it's kind of like, he does this grin and this look at the audience that it's kind of like, and people in the documentary were saying that it was the middle finger to the Star Wars community, that it was George Lucas saying, as your benevolent creator, I'm creating this, you're going to love him and buy my merch. And everybody, like, that is a really interesting documentary if you ever get the chance to watch it.
I don't want to wrap this up on a low level, on a really low point. So what is, if there was one thing you could say to a younger fan who wants to get into Star Wars, if there's one instance that you could use to entice them into watching any of the films, what would you say? I know for me, it would need to be, like, if I was to tell a young child, like, why should I watch Star Wars? Why, blah, blah, blah. Tell them, it's a space cowboy movie. I mean, to be brutally honest, that's what it is. It's a space cowboy movie. You got, you know, with samurai warriors in it. Essentially, that's what they are. Because it's like, there's not many ways to really kind of express what Star Wars is, unless you really kind of look at the brunt of it and say, okay, yeah, it's a space cowboy movie with ninjas or samurai. What would you say, Spence?
Like, just describing it?
Yeah, I mean, or tell them an instance, or say something that you would say to convince somebody to watch it.
Really, I just show them, like, a doll of Grogu. It's like, this is what you are waiting for.
There you go.
There's a whole show about this character, and you're going to love him.
That works. Or, I mean, if you want, you can always show them my lightsaber, or, you know, this little thing right here. What about you, Ames? What you got?
That's actually the really difficult question, because my brain first went to, I had the opportunity to see my princess become a general, which I have said about, of course, Robin Wright, Princess Buttercup, became general, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on her name, for Wonder Woman, Antiope.
Antiope, yeah.
She's General Antiope.
And then she became president.
And then she became the president.
House of Cards.
So my brain first went to one of the last lines I remember from the sequel, which was, rebellions are built on hope.
Sequel of what?
Of Star Wars original trilogy. Sorry, trilogy. Going back, Princess Leia, became a general. And General Organa told multiple people that rebellions are built on hope. And Rey carries it through. And then I just went back to, it wasn't a help me Obi-Wan Kenobi moment that won me over for Leia. For everything that she stood for, it was the, aren't you a little short to be a stormtrooper? But trying to just entice somebody, if in a time of darkness, you're like, this movie, this set of movies is about bucking tradition. Mm-hmm. Creating rebellion and thriving on hope. That is the best way that I could describe our space western to somebody. But I would also probably pull a Spencer and be like, and here is a friend. Take this wee Grogu. His name is, looks like Yoda. I know, it's okay. We didn't know. It's okay. And then it just turns into the little kid with the keychain lightsaber who wants to fight the bigger kid with the full-grown lightsaber, or creating it out of a wrapping paper tube. There's the community is what makes these movies. And even divided, this community will still always agree that the original trilogy is the Stan Lee of this community. It is what binds us and brings us all together. It is the Force.
There you go. Well, and on that note, that about wraps up another awesome and special episode of The Filmlosophers. We appreciate you listening in. You can tune in on all of our streaming platforms, on all of our previous episodes, over at iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Spotify, Audio Boom, Pandora, everywhere else where you can listen to podcasts. Check us out. Drop us a 5-star review. Let us know what you think. Also, check us out on our social pages at Facebook.com/filmlosophers, and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101, as well as our website at filmlosophers.com. This is a really unique fan base, and as somebody who is a part of it actively, as well as the rest of us here at this table, the great thing is that this fan base is still here, and there are great parts about it that will never, ever go away. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm hopefully getting promoted into Nini.
Have a happy May the 4th be with you, Star Wars Day, and class dismissed.